recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome in Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty with you on this very hot Monday night. And Corey, we've reached that time of the year where I think we're basically stuck at this temperature. Unless we get a rain shower, a nice afternoon here or there, it's going to be hot from here on out through at least half of football season.
The first day of summer, I do believe, was yesterday. And you could definitely feel it in the air, Dalton. You're absolutely right. It's that time of year to where if you're a football fan, the true football fans that play the game will definitely rise to the top because the heat is definitely on.
Yeah, of course, we've got a ton of sports to talk about. I mean, the sports world is never quiet. We've got Women's World Cup going on, the College World Series. They're in Game 1 right now. Of course, Braves are looking great in the NL East, and NBA Draft, NHL Draft both took place over the last week. So there's a lot to talk about, but football, you mentioned it. We're getting even closer. I did the math earlier, and from tonight, so including today, looks like we have 6 Mondays until the very first preseason game kicks off. The Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, that kicks off on August 1st, so that'll be Denver and Atlanta, and then from there, 9 Mondays, including tonight, before the first college football games, where we have Miami and Florida kicking off a little bit earlier this year. So we'll certainly talk a lot of football tonight, but I want to lead off talking about the Women's World Cup, with USA beating Spain today in the knockout round 2-1 on a pair of penalty kicks from the captain, Megan Rapinoe. Spain was a bit of a tougher test than any of the USA's earlier matchups so far in the World Cup, and the Americans certainly not on their A game today. It was a real grind them out game if you watched it all from Spain. Lots of fouls and even a yellow card thrown out there on both teams. The last foul from Spain that resulted in that penalty kick and game winner, that was even a really ticky-tacky call, Corey, but so was the yellow card that they gave Rapinoe earlier when her hand came up and touched a Spaniard in the face, like kind of almost smacked at her while she was going after the ball. But now Team USA moves on to face France on Friday in Paris in the quarterfinals. And something about, I don't watch women's soccer. I don't pretend to be a huge women's soccer fan, but something about World Cups and Olympics, men's or women's soccer, I'm there. I just love the patriotism and everybody getting behind the one team. It's a real fun time of year.
Without question, I mean, you're looking at the United States advancing to the quarterfinals, Dalton, and that's huge. That's the matchup that they wanted to see. There was question as to whether the women's team would throw the game in the round of 16 mm-hmm. in order not to match up with France, and the women were like, why would we try to intentionally lose a game? So they're going to continue to advance, and tickets are sky high for the prices, and rightfully so, because you look at these two teams, they've battled each other, they know each other quite well, and I think it's going to be a wonderful game Friday at 2:00 on Fox.
And they're the two best teams in the tournament. I think if you ask most soccer experts, they'll say USA the favorite and France the second favorite in this entire tournament, but they're playing in Paris. France is holding the World Cup, so this game coming up on Friday is in Paris. That's kind of like, if this were the college football playoff, that would be like Alabama and Clemson, the top two teams in the nation, playing at Clemson, the very first, the semifinal round of the college playoff. And on top of that, France, even though traditionally they lose to Team USA, I think they've only won 3 of the last 23 matchups, but they've won 2 of the last 3. So France has been really competitive. They could put it could be a sneak up on your game for the USA on Friday.
Without question, Dalton, I was mentioning the ticket prices. You look at a pair of tickets for this game listed at $11,000 on the secondary market. And that's for women's soccer. And that'll let you know the passion that's going on around the World Cup. But just a tremendous event. Look forward to the United States continuing to hopefully put up great numbers and dominate and find a way to continue to advance.
We got to talk about the College World Series a little bit. Right now, they're in the bottom of the third of that first game in the College World Series finals between Vanderbilt and Michigan. But Auburn eliminated last Wednesday, a 5-3 loss to the Louisville Cardinals, and that put an end to the Tiger season with a 38-28 record. And watching that last game, man, it was kind of like so many of the other games we've seen. They just kept falling behind and battling back, but just unable to convert some of those good opportunities they had into runs last week against Louisville. They ended up out-hitting the Cards, actually, in that game. 13 hits for Auburn, ended up leaving 12 runners on base. Of course, from there, Louisville went on to eliminate Mississippi State and then lost to Vanderbilt in the semifinal. And by the way, with Louisville, did you see that pitcher during the Vanderbilt game, the first game which Vanderbilt ended up eliminating him? But Luke Smith, who was really good that game, he pitched all the way into the ninth inning, and he starts running his mouth after the strikeouts, dropped a couple F-bombs at the Vanderbilt bench.
It was pretty interesting because, again, my mom is a diehard Vanderbilt fan. She's a graduate of Vanderbilt, and she asked me, she was like, that's one of the first things she asked me, Dalton, did you see the type of language the pitcher was using toward our guys at Vanderbilt? I said, yes, ma'am, I did. I said, I think he got a little bit overexcited, but you know, Vanderbilt find a way to ultimately pay him back by go ahead and rocking the Cardinals and finding a way to advance to the College World Series. But he was definitely a little bit excited getting him a couple strikeouts. But the bad thing about that is I could see him doing that maybe at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have batters there that can still go ahead and plug you for runs, probably not the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, I think he started yelling at him. He might have started earlier in the game.
Early.
Seventh or eighth inning, he was for sure yelling at the Commodore's dugout. And then, like you said, they lit him up, and in the bottom of the ninth, or actually top of the ninth, ended up getting those two runs across and winning that game. On the other side of the bracket, you had Texas Tech end Florida State season, and of course that sent the legendary coach Mike Barton into retirement for Florida State. I think the next day or maybe a couple days later, Florida State came out and announced that his son, Mike Martin Jr., will be taking over the program. But the Seminole season ended at the hands of Texas Tech, and then after that, Michigan ended up taking care of Texas Tech. So that leaves us tonight with game one of the finals, and Michigan right now actually on top of Vanderbilt, 4-2. Wolverines scored the first four runs of the night. Now Vanderbilt up to bat at the bottom of the third and have a runner on. So we'll kind of keep you updated on that through tonight. Also, coming up on the other side of this break, we're talking with Sherman Williams, former Alabama and Dallas Cowboys running back. We're going to talk to him quite a bit about his upcoming gala. I think the third annual gala, is that right,
Corey? It is. It is the third annual.
Coming up this Thursday night. So we'll get the detail on that. We'll also ask him some questions about Alabama and his Dallas Cowboys this year and get some football takes from him. But Sherman Williams coming up on the other side of the break. Maybe he's a baseball fan. We can ask him about the Atlanta Braves because they have been on a streak lately, an absolute tear, and just so happens to coincide perfectly with the Philadelphia Phillies having a long slide down the NL East standings. Atlanta beat the Washington Nationals 4-3 last night in extra innings. He had Johan Camargo coming on as a pinch hitter, and he had a two-run shot that gave the Braves a 4-2 lead. So they go on to win that game. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, they lose their seventh game in a row to Miami 6-4, and Atlanta now has a 6.5 game lead in the NL East, kind of out of nowhere. I think just a week and a half ago, they were tied with the Phillies, but Atlanta, they're on top of the NL East now, second best record in the National League, 8 wins behind the Dodgers, 54, and right now the 5th best record in all of the major leagues. You got the Dodgers in first, Twins second, Yankees third, and Astros fourth. So the Braves getting it done, mainly on the offensive side of the plate, but they've got some good young pitchers too, Corey.
But you have to love Josh Donaldson from Faith Academy, coming on strong for the Atlanta Braves. Mr. Rain Man being on the cover of the MLB baseball game a couple of years ago, starting to heat his bat up a little bit, and I think he's going to possibly make the All-Star game, and that'll be huge for him as well. A great pickup by the Atlanta Braves. I was happy to see him get closer, so a lot of his fans here from the Mobile, Alabama area and the Auburn area have an opportunity to go and support and watch him play.
And speaking of local guys, we'll wrap up the headline segment with this. Zach Sucker, the PGA Tour player, former St. Paul Saint. I think he ended up playing college golf at UAB, but finishing in second this weekend at the Travelers Championship. You had Chez Reavy, who really ended up dominating. He finished at 17 under par. So Chez Reavy wins his first in 11 years, but congrats to former St. Paul Saint Zach Suker. He's just had a crazy roller coaster of a ride the last few years. I know some knee surgeries he had in 2017, and he's trying to earn that permanent PGA Tour card, and he certainly came closer with that second-place finish this weekend in the Travelers Championship. All right, when we come back, we'll talk with Sherman Williams. He's got the third annual Williams-Palmer Gala coming up, and I think it's coming up this Thursday night.
It is.
We'll get the detail on that, and we'll talk some football with Sherman Williams. We come back on Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty with you. And a pleasure to introduce our next guest here on Sports Night, the Crimson Cowboy, Sherman Williams, former Alabama Crimson Tide and Dallas Cowboys running back. Coming up this Thursday, the third annual benefit gala, Dinner with David Palmer and Sherman Williams. Special guest speaker Stephen Davis. That's coming up this Thursday night at the Battle House Hotel. So we want to talk about that and get a little football talk out of the way. Thanks for joining us tonight, Sherman.
Hey, Corey, thanks for having me, man. I heard the University of Alabama and I heard the Dallas Cowboys, but I did not hear the Manatee Mighty Marching Leopards up there at Blount High School.
That's right.
1990 state champions under the guidance of Coach Ben Harris. Now, I heard everything about Alabama, and I heard everything about the Cowboys, so I just wanted to make sure them Leopards was recognized as well.
Just a slight oversight there.
No worries. I can't let you get away like that.
No way. I wouldn't expect it.
Good to talk to you, Corey. How you been, man?
Man, we're great. Dalton Orwig and myself here with you tonight, Sherman, and you have some great things going on. You know, you look at the history, you're one of the few guys in the country, if not the world, to go on win that coveted high school state championship, a college football national championship, and then win the world championship in the NFL. You put those on your resume, and that's a great trifecta, Sherman. But it goes along with what you're trying to do now in the Palmer Williams Group. The third annual benefit gala will be held this coming Thursday. Talk to us about what the Palmer Williams Group is and the importance of this gala this Thursday.
Well, of course, just like you mentioned, man, you know, to be able to win on every level of championship is not something that a person can just concoct on their own. You know, it had to be a spiritual thing, and God was definitely on my side, and I was blessed enough to be with some great group of guys and play on some teams with some Hall of Fame players. Great coaches along the way, man. It stars aligned, and I just thank God for allowing me and put me in a position to be able to take advantage of those opportunities. But, you know, with all of that come, the accolades came also a pitfall in my life where I served jail time and I went to prison. So I know God was working through me at that time as well. So I just thank God, man, for the many, many blessings, the trials, the tribulations, and everything in my life. Coming up in the city of Pritchard, Alabama, where circumstances wasn't always beneficial or the most affluent or economic situation. But, you know, through the struggle, a man's character is tested in his adversity, and it's how you tell the real true character of a person. It's how they handle adversity. And I was just blessed, man, that I was able to come out of prison and get this organization started, the Palmer Williams Group, with the assistance of my co-founder, Mr. David Palmer. And we've been at it now, man, for 6 years, and it's just been a beautiful blessing to the community, beautiful blessing to our families, to all the families and the children that we are helping. We have a great group of people, of volunteers, great supporters, Wind Creek Hospitality, Pilot Catastrophe, Hargrove Engineer, Baum Howells. We got community leaders, community support, Palmer's Toyota, American to go on with McConnell. All these different people in this community, man, that have shown great love and support for us and what we do with the young people in the community. And we just happy, man. We're grateful for it. And we just celebrating coming up with another annual fundraiser this year at the Bella House in Mobile, our third annual gala with a Auburn guy. Can you imagine that? Auburn and Alabama hooking up to raise funds for the community, the cities of Pritchard and Baldwin County and Mobile County, all the surrounding counties. Man, just a beautiful thing, man. Two people can come together and do something like this. It's going to be an epic event.
I know as a motivated guy, you've probably been setting goals your whole life, Sherman, and knocking them down just the same. I'm wondering, with your organization and the great stuff you do, what are your goals for not just this Thursday night at the Battle House Hotel, but what are your goals for the organization as a whole?
Our goal is to bring on a worldwide change, you know, a generational change between, you know, the human being and the spirituality of God, introducing Christ into everybody's life, winning souls, but also just to make a change in young people's life, give them a sense of direction, and just to see the success pattern. You know, if we're able to help one kid, that probably wouldn't have an opportunity no other way than coming through our program, then we consider our program a success. But that's our main mission, man, is to win souls, get people involved in the spirituality of Jesus Christ, make the world a better place if we can, one person at a time. That's our goal, man. It's very simple. Just giving kids opportunities, just giving them the right information. Me and David ourselves come up in certain situations where information wasn't privy to us, so we just want to use our personal experiences to use that so kids who come from similar situations, they don't have to go through the things that we went through. And we know, we understand that it was more just lack of knowledge, lack of information. And you just want to be that tool, that support system for young people, to give them some knowledge, to give them some ideas that can help them overcome obstacles.
We're talking with Sherman Williams, the Crimson Cowboy, coming up this Thursday night at the Battle House Hotel, the third annual, it's already been 3 years, the third annual benefit gala dinner with David and Sherman and special guest speaker Stephen Davis. That's coming up this Thursday night at the Battle House Hotel.
Sherman, yeah. And that's a great event now that it's your third annual. I remember Emmett Smith a couple of years ago coming to support your wonderful gala, and now you're looking at your third year, and it's just continuing to grow as well as your organization, Sherman. Like you said, just two of the greatest players in the history of the University of Alabama football, Deuce, David Palmer, and yourself with the Sherman Shake getting it done. But when you're giving back, not only through this gala, through your Pritchard Cowboys organization, you do something weekly at High Point Park to where you're encouraging others to give back. How can people give back through the Pritchard Cowboys and at High Point Park also?
Well, what we do every Monday through Thursday, I come up there and I give out free lessons, free sessions to young kids who want to learn and understand the safety techniques and fundamentals of football. You know, football is a very violent sport, but if you got the right techniques and you use the right fundamentals, it could be a very safe sport. And that's what we want to do. We want to give back in the sports arena as well. And our organization, the Pritchard Cowboys, is sponsored by the Palmer Williams Group. And we have four sports organizations, which is a soccer team, a baseball team, a basketball team, and also the football team. And we have a cheerleader program as well. So we just don't want to exclude the young ladies, but we understand and know it's important for young ladies to get involved in our organization, our program as well. But what we do, man, we just get out here on Monday through Thursdays at High Point Park, and I teach the fundamentals and basic skills of football. But we also have a big camp coming up this weekend at Chickasaw Bowl Park that will take place on Adlock Road in 8 Mile, where we're going to be out there with a former group of Alabama and Auburn players going to be out there teaching kids as well. So it's going to be a fun week, man, for us, and it's going to be a good event as well on Saturday at Chickasaw Bowl Park.
Man, that is some great stuff. Just fantastic things you're doing for the community. I know when you're out there, you know, working in the community, you probably get asked a lot of questions, a lot of the same questions, I would imagine. So we need to ask you a couple football questions here, if you don't mind.
Man, I love football.
What's your take? I'm just going to ask you a very general question. We know that the stakes are always high at Alabama. They're expected to be in the national championship again this year. What are you seeing from the Crimson Tide as we head into 2019?
Well, what I'm seeing is a competitive team. You know, we have a no quarterback controversy this year, so that's a little bit of a pressure release when you don't have to think about the controversies of the quarterback. And now, having lost the national championship game, so now they get that chip back on their shoulder, and they're going to go out and play football the way they know how, and not that debacle that they showed up for out there in California back in January. So I look for big things from the University of Alabama. And also, Auburn is not going to be a bad team this year as well. They got a great group coming back. You know, Matt Lawrence has done a great job in the offseason with recruiting. So I'm looking for the Iron Bowl to be another epic game, and hopefully it'll be a very competitive game. So I think both teams are in a position to where they can go out and win some ball games this year and play some good football.
They have an outstanding running back, Coach Auburn, that is, and Cadillac Williams making the return. And you mentioned you have Steven Davis, the former Auburn running back, coming and speaking at your third annual benefit gala this coming Thursday. I know Dalton had another football question to ask you in regards to the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, with Dak Prescott, the quarterback there in Dallas, coming up on the end of his rookie contract. I know we just saw Carson Wentz get a nice big contract extension and talks supposedly ongoing with Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. What do you think of the young quarterback? You think he's done enough to earn one of those huge extensions like we saw out of Wentz last month?
Well, I think Dak is a good quarterback, and I'm not quite sold on the idea if he's the quarterback that's going to take us to this drought that we've been in for the last 30 years on Super Bowl wins. I'm really not there yet, because he fumbles and don't protect the ball as well as I would like, my personal opinion. But I think that if he plays well, and he has the talent to play well, but we got to surround him with a great group of people as well. But I just don't know right now. The jury is still out on Dak Prescott in my court. You know, so I would just say hold up, you know, let's just give him another year, see what we can do, you know, and see if he can get us to the next level.
I agree with you there. Just trying to see if the Cowboys can go ahead and take it to that next level of not just winning a couple playoff games, but reappear in the Super Bowl. Sherman, I would like to know personally, what is your biggest and most famous moment that you hold near and dear to your heart? I mean, you've played in the national championship game. You've played for the Super Bowl. What moment sticks out to you the most? Because before you answer that, I'll tell you, from a collegiate standpoint, it was the swing pass that you catch against Ohio State and take it in. That was huge, and I really like that moment in your career. But what moment for yourself really defines Sherman Williams, if there is one?
Well, I tell you what, it was a play, man. That play that you speak of is one of the greatest plays I ever completed in my career, period, on all levels. But I had several plays. But it was a play, a game-winner play. We was on the road down in Starkville, Mississippi, my senior year, and it was coming down. We were still undefeated at the time. We were still hoping to go and try to win the national championship. And it was we was trailing the Mississippi State with like 17, 13, 14 seconds left on the clock. And we had, you know, they got sacked, and we lost a few yards, and we came back the next play. Didn't get the first down, so we come up on fourth down. And it's a must. It's a must. We like 4th and 17. It's long. So, you know, they've been doubling me and playing in the box on me all game long. And it was just a play that just had to happen. And Homer Smith was our coordinator. He called the play, swing right out the backfield up the sideline. I was in double coverage. And I know I'm not a tall guy in stature, and I know these guys are much taller than me that was on the defense in Mississippi State. But it was a play that I had to make. And the ball came out. I see the ball in the air. I'm going down the sideline. And I just, some outside of myself, for the first time that I realized it was something outside of myself, allowed me the opportunity to go up over these two giant guys and come down with this football to gain a first down and go on and lead the team into a victory. And that what kept our national title hopes alive. But that play was very significant in that whole season, because if we didn't win that play, we would have never played Ohio State in that Citrus Bowl game. We would have had a loss, probably would have never played in the SEC championship game that year, because Mississippi State was an SEC school. So a lot depended on that one play, and it probably goes under the radar for a lot of people, but some real dour Alabama fans do bring it up to me sometimes.
Oh,
but
yeah,
that was one of the biggest plays to me in my career.
I like that moment because it brings back and gives me great Bama flashbacks, me being a huge Alabama fan. Dalton asked you a question moments ago about what your thoughts were on Dak Prescott and extending his contract and being the leader of the Cowboys. But tell me now that you have my best friend Gene Smith brought up a great point about Amari Cooper being on the Cowboys now. When Amari Cooper makes that transition from the Raiders over to the Cowboys, you seem to see a jolt in Ezekiel Elliott running the football, and it just added dimensions to Dak's game. How do you feel about Amari Cooper finishing his career in a Cowboy uniform?
Well, finishing his career, I hope you have a long career. I hope it's a long way down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But Amari Cooper coming in and adding that explosiveness to that offense is always a great benefit. And, you know, with him being able to stretch the field and have that coverage where he could take a five-yard pass and take it to the house, it makes defenses real tough to play eight in the box against Zeke when Zeke got the ball, so it frees him up a lot. So having Amari Cooper now just bringing Jason Witten back into the fold. So it's gonna open up some things now. It got more weapons around him, Dak, and we'll see if Dak is able to get it done. Now this is going to put more pressure on Dak because you're not going to have the excuse that you don't have the weapons. You got Jason Witten, a future Hall of Famer, Zeke Elliott, a perennial Pro Bowler, and Amari Cooper, one of the most explosive wide receivers in the game. Now the offense should have no reason for being stagnant at any point in the season. Barring injury, but with that group and that offensive line, all we need is the quarterback to step up and make the plays that's going to be necessary to win. So that's what I think about what Amari Cooper has brought to the Dallas Cowboys, because you look at what we had with Emmitt, Troy, mm-hmm. and Mike, you know, the triplets. You know, you look at that combination, man, how could you lose? You know?
That's right.
You throw Deion in there, then you throw other people, myself, and you throw Kevin Williams and a couple more people. It's just a winning combination. A good receiver, a good running back, and a good quarterback.
That's right. Big year for Dallas. I know a lot of Dallas fans would love to see him looking like they did in the heyday, and a lot of Bama fans now pulling for the Cowboys because of Cooper, and of course, yeah, because the Crimson Cowboy used to wear that blue star on the side of his helmet too.
Well, you know, Amari Cooper is now officially a Crimson Cowboy. So once you put the Crimson on and then you get the Cowboys, you officially become a Crimson Cowboy.
A very exclusive club. And you can meet the originator of the Crimson Cowboy Club this Thursday night, the Battle House Hotel, third annual benefit gala dinner with David Palmer and Sherman Williams. And you got that guest speaker, Stephen Davis. Should be a great event. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we want all the Auburn people, man, to come out and support Stephen Davis. You know, we welcome him to the community, to the Mobile area. He's coming out of South Carolina. He just got inducted into the Hall of Fame for the sports of high school sports in South Carolina, sports in general. So everybody come out, man. Go on our website, PalmerWilliamsGroup.org. Get you a ticket. Come out, celebrate, help us raise funds here and support a former War Eagle, man. He's talking about the Auburn University Alumni Association needs to come out and support one of their own.
There you go. Auburn fans and Alabama fans in the same place. What could possibly go wrong? We appreciate it, Sherman. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and hope to talk to you again.
It's my pleasure, man. Always. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Sherman.
All right. The Crimson Cowboys, Sherman Williams. Great conversation. Some Alabama and Dallas insight. And, of course, that great event coming up Thursday, Corey.
I couldn't be happier for Sherman Williams because, again, it's the ultimate story of redemption. He speaks on it freely about how he went from the pinnacle of his career and hit rock bottom and being incarcerated and finding a way now to come back and give back to the community and help young people, both male and female, not make the same mistakes that he made. And that's the biggest thing. And you can go to PalmerWilliamsGroup.org to learn more about his organization, his nonprofit organization, as well as find a way to attend his gala that is this Thursday. And he mentioned the Auburn family can come out and hear from a wonderful running back who went on to play for the Washington Redskins and Carolina Panthers, number 48, Stephen Davis, just an outstanding running back for the Auburn Tigers. And he will share his testimony and speak to all the Auburn and Alabama fans this Thursday at the Battle House. Looking forward to hearing from him.
Should be a good time out there. Just over 2.5 months now until college football kicks off. When we get back on Sports Night, we'll talk a little quick preview of the upcoming football season. Also, a big week in the NBA with the NBA draft last week and NBA free agency opening up here in this coming week. We'll get some NBA talk out of the way, too. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Thank you to Sherman Williams for coming on with us. Third annual benefit gala coming up this Thursday night. the Battle House Hotel. You can find your tickets and more information at, as soon as I can find the note, what is it, PalmerWilliamsGroup.org. More information on tickets and that event coming up this Thursday night. And NBA draft last week ended up all kinds of drama really entering the NBA draft. A lot of people were wondering if the drama had ended when Anthony Davis was traded to the LA Lakers just about a week and change ahead of the draft. But the New Orleans Pelicans on the NBA draft night end up with three first-round picks after trading that number four pick from Atlanta. They gave it to Atlanta and got Atlanta's number 8 and number 17 picks in return. So the Pelicans really building a young crew up, of course, after taking Zion Williamson with the first overall pick. And how about the emotion from Zion Williamson after being selected first overall? Everyone knew that he was going to go number 1 overall. Even still, when you got there, in the moment, you had that thought, like, well, maybe they won't take Zion Williamson, but 99.9% sure that the Pelicans were going to start Zion Williamson's career off in a New Orleans jersey. And for him to cry and show the emotion that he did when asked about his mother after he put on that New Orleans Pelicans hat, I thought, Corey, that it was genuine, and I think it really showed why so many people have really fallen into liking this Zion Williamson to the point where he's not even known as Zion Williamson anymore. He's got the LeBron effect. People just call him Zion, but some great emotion from him on draft night.
And you know what was great, Dalton? You look at the first three picks with R.J. Barrett coming up on stage with his dad and getting emotional there as well, and Ja Morant on the stage with his dad, and of course Zion. You know, they're not scared to show their emotions, and we're talking about young men now, again, 18 and 19 years old, who are still babies, essentially, when they're playing with grown men who are 39 and 40 years old, like Vince Carter is.
Mm-hmm.
But in that situation, it was a great draft pick by the New Orleans Pelicans, finding additional draft picks, giving up that four to gain more in the future, because they gained so much by trading Anthony Davis. And now you look and they gain even more. And I thought that by pronouncing Drew Holiday the face of the franchise, and by admitting that Drew Holiday is the one who we're going to build this team on, is going to be our leader, Zion is just, he's not the savior of the franchise. I agree with that. I think he's a very unique talent. He has yet to play one NBA game. He's a tremendous draw for television ratings, for shoe ratings, and is just a tremendous athlete. But the Pelicans really got better on draft night and through free agency, and it's going to be interesting to see, like you mentioned, Dalton, now that free agency has hit, where a lot of these free agents are going to go.
Well, you know, there's everybody after the draft, they want to put out those articles and get on TV, who won or lost the draft. And of course, it's impossible to tell, especially the day after and the night after the draft, who won. But with three picks in that first round and what they were able to turn Anthony Davis's expiring contract into, you have to say that the Pelicans have at least the highest ceiling now of any of the teams that left the draft after Thursday with those three picks. You had, of course, Zion go 1 overall, Jackson Hayes 8, that big center out of Texas, which now gives the Pelicans, if Hayes does develop and if Zion is the player they think he is, they're going to have easily the most athletic front court in the NBA, because both of those guys can move a lot. And then in the 17th pick, they used that to pick out a true sharpshooter on the wing. What was his name? He came out of Virginia Tech. Nikhil Alexander Walker. That's who they picked with 17. So the Pelicans got three picks in. But my biggest complaint, I would say, with the NBA draft is we've heard all these trades going into the draft. We knew that the Pelicans had gotten that fourth overall pick. And then right before the first round, or right in those first few picks, they trade that number four to Atlanta. So Atlanta now has the number four pick. But when DeAndre Hunter comes up there on the stage, they still hand him an LA Lakers hat to put on and to do his interview. Even though the Lakers owned the pick two teams ago, the NBA can't figure out that they need to put the hats up there for the teams that these guys are about to play on, not wait until whatever it is, July 6th, when free agency officially opens and the trades go through. That's my biggest complaint, I'd say, with the NBA draft.
I think that they have to find a way to change the dates of free agency, because you're absolutely right. You capture that once-in-a-lifetime moment, and you have on the wrong hat.
Right.
I mean, if you're traded afterwards, that's one thing. I mean, you look at Kobe Bryant going up with the Charlotte Hornets cap on, and then all of a sudden now he's traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. So in that situation, you know, it didn't have anything to do with free agency. So you look at that and you don't want to ruin that moment. But when you know that you're drafting for another team and it's already predetermined, and because June 30th is the date to where they can actually announce and sign with the free agency without any restrictions or being fined or talking about it, the cat's already out of the bag. You know what's going on. So in that situation, I have to agree with you.
Well, free agency, you know, this year free agency has been talked about for years with the big players that are coming out on the market, or at least the big players they expected to enter free agency. And that took a big hit during that Game 5 loss for the Warriors when they officially lost Kevin Durant for the rest of the year, and Klay Thompson went down also. And it looks like their injuries are going to go well into next year. They're saying Durant probably won't even play next season. If Thompson can come back, it'll be after the All-Star break. So that leaves you with two of the top three guys that are entering free agency with some really scary health issues right now. Still, most teams are saying they're going to go after Durant anyway. And a huge report coming out from the Bleacher Report earlier this afternoon. The author of this, Rick Boucher, put a lot of information in this one story. But he says now the Brooklyn Nets favored to land Kevin Durant in free agency. Apparently, he and Kyrie Irving have been linking up quite a bit over the last few weeks, and they want to be on the same team together. Whether that team is the New York Knicks or the Brooklyn Nets, we'll have to find out. But right now, the books in Las Vegas and offshore giving Brooklyn the upper hand with Kevin Durant.
You know, I think that Kevin Durant is going to leave Golden State. I think that DeMarcus Cousins will stay in Golden State. But you look at if KD has his exodus and has to sit out a year, no matter how long he has to sit out, no matter how long it takes him to actually heal from that ruptured Achilles, it's not going to matter because it's going to be a big splash for that franchise knowing that they're going to get a healthy KD coming back. So you look at Kyrie Irving, you're hearing a lot of noise from the Clippers on what the Clippers are actually going to do, who they're going to sign, and the team that Doc Rivers had this past year, which made the playoffs. But the Brooklyn Nets have a lot of cap space, meaning they have a lot of money that they can spend on free agents, and I expect them to do so to land one of the Power Five free agents that are on the NBA market.
And money, a big deal to a lot of these free agents. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what Durant and Kawhi and Thompson really decide when this comes up this offseason. But tonight, the NBA awards, and they've got the odds out there, and they're looking pretty slanted right now, so I think they have a good idea of who's going to win. But MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo, James Harden, or Paul George will walk out with the award tonight. Giannis is a heavy favorite to win the MVP after that season that he led the Bucks on this year. Rookie of the Year, young kid from the Mavericks, Luka Doncic. He looks like he's the heavy favorite to win Rookie of the Year. Right behind him, Trae Young, who just did a fantastic job with the Atlanta Hawks this year. And then DeAndre Ayton, the first overall pick that went to Phoenix. For the Sixth Man Award, looks like Lou Williams is a pretty heavy favorite, the Clippers player there. Montrezl Harrell, also Domantas Sabonis in the mix for that. Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert. Still with the Memphis Grizzlies, I believe. Is Gobert still with the Grizzlies?
Yes.
Okay. And then Giannis was also in the mix for Defensive Player of the Year, but Gobert the favorite to win that, and Paul George also in the mix. And then Most Improved Player, and probably the player that gained more eyes than anyone in the NBA Finals, Pascal Siakam. A lot of people learned his name during that Finals win over Golden State. He's the heavy favorite to win Most Improved Player. Behind him, you have the Nets point guard D'Angelo Russell and De'Aaron Fox out of Sacramento. So tonight's NBA Awards, I think they get started at 8.
They do. On TNT is where you can follow that. And it's kind of weird that where you've already forgotten who the best three players in the regular season were.
Yeah.
Because you're like, Kawhi Leonard, that's all that's on your brain right now, and he's not being recognized as anything. So you look at also Damian Lillard. People had that Damian Lillard effect. Mm-hmm. He was great in the postseason. You forgot about that. Paul George, he exited the playoffs, I believe, in the first round. So with that being said, you're like, okay, I really wish this award ceremony would be held closer
right
to the end of the regular season or right as the postseason play begins at the end of April, early May, because now here it is, we're getting ready to go into July, and you forgot about what everybody did to deserve being nominated.
Yeah, just take Kawhi. The season doesn't start for Kawhi Leonard until the playoffs. That's part of why he liked Toronto so much. I think they only played him 60 games this year, so he got 22 games of rest. He wasn't putting it all out there for the regular season, but I also think it might slant the votes, Because, like you said, you're talking a month and a half, 2 months later, and Giannis Antetokounmpo clearly had the best postseason of the three MVP candidates. I wonder if that maybe got him a few more votes as the postseason wore on. All right, we'll come back with more Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Want to talk a little bit of football when we get back to wrap up this night's edition of Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. I want to thank Sherman Williams for coming on with us earlier in the show. Crimson Cowboy promoting that third annual benefit gala coming up this Thursday night. Dinner with David Palmer and Sherman Williams. Special guest speaker Stephen Davis. So they're getting the Auburn fans in there too. That's this Thursday night at the Battle House. You can get your tickets at palmerwilliamsgroup.org. And also thanks to caller called in there during the break. Rudy Gobert, Utah Jazz. Of course, he's with the Utah Jazz.
That's right.
Jazz getting a little bit stronger this last week, too, adding Conley from Memphis. So it'll be interesting to see how the Jazz do next year. But I do want to shout out the American Softball Association. I think they're about going on 2 weeks now into the 2019 season. They had a couple games out at South Alabama last week with the weather just looked perfect and tons of great softball being played. A quick update on where we are in the American Softball League season right now. Team Mobile USA had their first loss of the year Thursday night. They lost to the E1 Pro Ballers 10-5, but still leading the standings with a 6-1 record. Right behind them now in the standings, you have those E1 Pro Ballers. They're 4-3 so far. Then you have the Field and the Performance Lab tied for third at 2-5, and they get tonight off. I think they actually had last night off too, so they should be well rested for another doubleheader tomorrow night at Pat Hicks Softball Field in Satsuma. They get started at 5 with the Field playing the E1 Pro Ballers. Then after that, Team Mobile USA takes on the Performance Lab. You can get your tickets for $10 at the gate, and kids 12 and under get in free if they're wearing a team jersey. So you can get those jerseys and find out more about tickets at asbasoftball.com. Corey, I saw an interesting article pop up on auburnundercover.com over the weekend, and they were reporting on this CBS football writer, Barton Simmons, who was on a podcast, I guess, and Auburn came up, and really interesting. He said that, you know, a lot of talk about the quarterbacks going into this make-or-break year for Gus Malzahn. A lot of people are saying he's on the hot seat, but he said he believes that it doesn't matter who the quarterback is, that you just have an 8-5 coach in Gus Malzahn, and that's who he is. No matter who you have behind a quarterback, he might have a good 10-4 year here or there, but an 8-5 coach. And, you know, I look back at each and every year that Gus has coached, and outside of that first year in 2013 where they went 12-2, and, of course, you had the kick six and the prayer at Jordan Hare that year, he's been basically an 8-5 coach since. And I think this year, obviously, a huge year for Gus Malzahn to kind of break that stigma.
August 31st, 6:30 p.m., playing Oregon. We're going to find out real quick what this 2019 Auburn Tigers team is made out of. They followed up with Tulane, Kent State, and then they opened up SEC play against Texas A&M, dog. But you start off 0-1, okay, because Oregon is supposed to be pretty good out there in the Pac-10 or Pac-12, rather. Then you look Tulane, that should be a win. Kent State should be a win. So if you can start off 3-0 going into SEC play, I think you'll have a lot of Auburn Tigers fans happy. If you're 2-1, you don't need to be 2-2 after you play A&M.
No, that's for sure. Like you said, that first game against Oregon, absolutely massive on this Auburn schedule. And, you know, a lot of lines have already come out. We'll talk a lot of football as we go in. I think we have 8-9 weeks until the first games of college football begin for 2019. So coming up, we're going to try to preview each conference in depth. And we'll get started with that here in a couple weeks and have beat writers on to discuss in depth some of these conferences. But with Auburn, quite a few lines already out there. 3-point favorites over Oregon in that first game. 3.5-point dogs at A&M in week 4. 6.5-point favorites over Mississippi State. 7-point dogs to Florida. 9.5-point dogs at LSU on October 26th. And the only other lines they have out, 7.5-point underdogs to Georgia and 13-point underdogs to Bama. So Auburn, a heck of a schedule coming up this year. Gus will have to prove he's not an 8-5 coach.
We'll see if that line shifts as the season goes along.
All right, that does it. Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up, the car show with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton. Have a good one.